Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I am your host, executive producer Jonathan Strickland, and I love all things tech. It is time for another classic episode of Tech Stuff, and today we're going to visit an episode that we originally published on January 18th, 2012. Chris Paulette, my co-host at the time, and I decided to look into the topic of radio telescopes. I talked about these not too long ago when I did a series about DARPA. Well, now we're going to have a full episode dedicated to the topic, and I hope you guys enjoy.
So before we get started, we're going to do something we haven't done in a little while.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're going to listen to a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Minka, who says, I love your podcast and have enjoyed listening to your insightful and quirky explanations immensely. I tried to search through the past podcast to see if you had done one on radio telescopes to no avail, so I hope I didn't just miss it. It seems to me that radio telescopes are being used frequently to learn about this and study the far reaches of the galaxy and beyond, and that's pretty darn cool, so it'd be neat to learn more about how they work. Thanks, and thanks for the show, Minka. Well, you're welcome, Minka. I just wanted to say you're welcome. All right, so now we're moving on to our topic, the Smurfs. No, we're going to talk about radio telescopes
today.
That's
good. Yeah, we sort of, well, we've talked about things that relate to radio telescopes.
Yeah, like radio.
And SETI.
Yes, and SETI. SETI, which does very much relate to radio telescopes.
Well, yeah.
Well, what do radio telescopes do? Why are they important?
Well, it's funny that you should mention that.
Yeah.
Because they're...
My notes crashed, so I don't know what I'm talking about.
Your anymore. Notes crashed?
No, I'm not. I'm just kidding. They're still up. He can't see my computer from where he sits.
Yes, because he's sitting directly across from me.
Yes.
See, if you ever wondered if that was true or not, it is.
Yeah.
No, it's actually using... It's unlike a typical visual telescope.
Right.
Which uses lenses and your eyeball, and you look through it. And you look for stuff on the other side in space.
It directs light, which is in the visible spectrum of the electromagnetic frequency.
Yes.
To our eyeballs, ultimately.
Right, right. But, and then, yet again, another drastic oversimplification on my part. But a radio telescope is actually monitoring different parts of the electromagnetic frequency.
Yeah, yeah. It's looking at a completely different spectrum. So this is part of the spectrum that is not visible to the naked eye. So we are using these telescopes to measure radio frequency variations that come from outer space. And it turns out that lots of stuff out there generates radio frequencies, right?
Yep.
So things like quasars, pulsars, galaxies, distant stars, these sort of things can generate electromagnetic radiation and in the form of radio frequencies. And sometimes these are objects that we can't detect visually, but we can detect them if we have a sensitive enough tool that can detect and measure radio frequencies. So that's really what a radio telescope is all about. And it's kind of tricky picking up radio frequencies from outer space because only certain the actual band of frequencies or wavelengths, I should say, the band of wavelengths that exist within the electromagnetic magnetic spectrum that are radio frequency waves, it's pretty broad.
Yeah, about 10 meters and to 1 millimeter. That's a pretty good size.
Yeah, you can actually get radio waves that are even longer than that, like the size of football fields. But here's the thing is that the Earth has a level of the atmosphere called the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ionosphere is kind of funky. So you guys probably have heard us talk about ions before. You know, that's when we're talking about atoms that have either gained or lost an electron. And if you ionize something, that means you've got some free electrons roaming around in it. So like an ionized gas or a plasma can actually carry an electric charge, right?
Yes.
Why are you smiling at me?
Just because I saw a whole bunch of people going, woohoo, free electrons.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
They're so expensive otherwise. That's true. Have you seen my electric bill? Anyway, so you have the ionosphere where there are these free roaming electrons out there. And it kind of acts as a bit of a shield or a reflector in some ways. And so radio waves of a certain wavelength cannot pass through the ionosphere. Essentially anything that's 10 meters or longer, the ionosphere is opaque to those. That's why you can actually broadcast certain long wavelength radio waves and bank them off the ionosphere,
right?
Because it won't pass through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you start getting shorter than a 10 meter wavelength, you have radio waves that can pass through the ionosphere, but if it's longer than 20 centimeters, which is about 1.5 gigahertz in frequency when you talk about these, if it's longer than 20 centimeters, you start to have distortion as it passes through the ionosphere. It's called scintillation.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't that different from the way when we look up into the sky and we see stars twinkling.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the same sort of thing we talk about being scintillating. Same kind of idea, except in this case, you know, that's we're talking about the visual spectrum there. But here, yeah, at 20 centimeters or longer, you run into that problem. And so that's not entirely useful for measurement purposes. So radio telescopes tend to focus on, pun intended, wavelengths that are between 1 centimeter and 20 centimeters in length. Tend to. Now, there are some variations. And also, if you were to have a radio telescope, say, in orbit, where it's you know, you don't have the ionosphere as a in play, that's a different story. But ground-based radio telescopes kind of have to play within these rules because of the way the ionosphere works.
One of the nice things, though, about the radio telescope is that those frequencies generally come through pretty clearly. So putting one of the ground-based radio telescopes in orbit really wouldn't improve its ability to detect signals, at least based on my research.
Yeah, not within anything that's within those wavelengths. Yeah, actually, it's a little tricky to detect that stuff anyway because we're talking about really weak signals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by the time they reach the Earth, these signals are not very strong at all. In fact, one reference I looked at said that that if you were to add up all the energy that every radio telescope on Earth had been subjected to since they were built, it still would not equal the energy you would find in a snowflake.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah. Now, granted, that snowflake is the size of Detroit. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, typical snowflake.
No, and it is also worthwhile to note, especially before anyone writes in, that radio telescopes do have to be placed away from population centers in general, to some degree, because there is earthly interference.
Yeah, there's terrestrial radio interference that you have to try and minimize as much as possible. Otherwise, it's just so much noise that you're not going to even find any signal out there.
Right, right. So, it has its good points and its bad points simply because of the frequencies it's able to monitor. And it's a good point too that you you mentioned from the very first. Because these devices, I mean, I imagine people, you know, have a good idea what radio telescopes look like. I mean, we've all seen satellite dishes, and
yeah,
to some degree, that's more or less what they look like.
Yeah.
In fact, you may have seen pictures of them, but that I think gives it the sort of feeling that it's a fairly recent thing. And in fact, it was somebody in 1933 who figured out that there were radio frequencies coming from extraterrestrial bodies. Someone at, of course, Bell Telephone Laboratories.
Yes, laboratories.
You always do that.
I can't fight it. I can't fight this feeling anymore. I can't. But yes, so you're talking about Carl.
Carl Jansky.
Carl Jansky, yes. He built the first antenna that could be used as a radio telescope back in 1931, but it would take a couple of years to really figure out the fact that you could use this to explore the heavens above. Because when he built his radio frequency detector, it was not to act as a radio telescope.
No.
It was meant to detect static that could potentially interfere with radio telephone services.
Right, right. So he was working literally on a project for Bell.
Yeah. And what happened was he discovered that there was this interesting hissing noise he was picking up, and it was hitting a cycle. The hissing noise would occur at a certain time every day, and the cycle hit – well, not every day. The cycle hit every 23 hours and 56 minutes.
And once he removed the snake from the line,
no.
You realized there was something else hissing.
He figured out that 23 hours and 56 minutes was essentially the period that it takes for if you've got a fixed point on the sky for you to come back around so that you're pointing at that same object.
This will come up again later.
Eventually, he determined that this was the origin of this radio frequency was otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
So it was coming from outside the Earth, and that it was, in fact, coming from somewhere in the Sagittarius constellation.
Far out.
Yeah.
No, so, really, far out.
Guys, I'm picking up a signal from outer space. No, I'm sorry. It's not from outer space. It's just from just outside the room. It's Tari. She's telling me that we need to take a break to thank our sponsor. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
So it would take a few more years before you saw anyone build a parabolic antenna, which is what Chris was talking about earlier, the dish-style antennas.
Right.
Those are not the only kind of antennas that are used in radio telescopes. It's probably the most iconic and the most common we see. But there are other types of antennas, including dipole antennas, cylindrical parabolics, which are – they kind of look like a trough. There are the Yagi antennas, which are – not little guys who teach you how to, use kung fu or karate, I should say. There are horn antennas, there are Mills crosses, that kind of stuff, Mills crosses telescopes. Various ways of doing this, but the principle is essentially the same. It's to try and detect and gather as much of radio frequency radiation as possible. And usually there are several reflectors involved that reflect radio frequencies to a focal point that can then send the signal to a receiver. Mm-hmm. And then from there it gets amplified. And we'll go through that process in a little bit. But in the parabolic style of antenna, this is why you have that big dish. The dish part is actually reflecting frequencies so that they all are directed to a single focal point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually called the feed. It's usually a small antenna called the feed that is often called the feed horn that will collect the signal and send it to the receiver.
Ah, yes.
So these radio frequencies are, like we said, generated by lots of different stuff out there in space. but the problem is that they're so delicate. They're such tiny little frequencies that you have to really control for the noise element, not just by trying to isolate the antenna a bit, but also by making sure the material you've used in your antenna array is the right kind of stuff, because they're pretty sensitive things. And also the amount of information you can get is very much connected to the size of your antenna. Bigger antennas are able to provide a higher resolution image. It's kind of a weird word to say because we're not talking about visible light necessarily, but an image of what it is you're looking at, right? So,
yeah.
So the larger, the better in general. But if you start building so large that the material itself is heavy enough to warp, because it's so heavy that the structure itself can't maintain a specific shape, well, then you're not reflecting the radio frequencies to that focal point anymore. You've warped it out of shape, so you have to build it out of special materials, and you have to plan for, okay, well, we know that by designing an antenna of this size, this particular warping is going to occur, so we have to factor that into the design so that the warping actually ends up helping rather than hurting. And usually you do that by adding a second reflector that is that's movable. So you can have a second reflector actually positioned in such a way where the distortion from the main reflector hits the second reflector, which then reflects it back to the focal point.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets a little complicated. In fact, there are two main types of secondary reflectors. There's the Cassegrain focus, which is a reflector that's in front of the main antenna, or the main reflector, I should say. And then there's another one. If you have it in the back, it's called Gregorian focus, and it chants a lot.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Yeah, there was a pretty good chance.
It's possible. Now, given what Jonathan was just talking about, given the materials and the there are a lot of things that can affect the efficiency of a radio telescope,
sure,
including heat,
yeah,
because, or cold.
Yeah, you know, because the materials will expand or contract.
Right, right.
Wind.
The surface of the material itself, the surface of the material, yep, itself. But other than that, I mean, once you take all these things into account, it is theoretically possible to build as large a radio telescope as you possibly can. There is really no limit to the size, other than the fact that you're going to have to take things like gravity and temperature and things like that into account.
Tensile strength.
But conceivably, if you could build one that's three times the size of Earth, it would work.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating because it doesn't have to be a particularly large or a particularly small device. It just, you know, you can pick up more with it.
And a lot of radio telescopes are actually telescope, like, antenna arrays. So it's not just one antenna, it's several antennas working together in order for you to gather this information.
Teamwork.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
And that helps you create a larger radio telescope just by, you know, you're adding extra elements in it. It means that you sort of get around part of the problem, which is, you know, building just an enormous single antenna. You can do an array of antennas. There are different limitations on this as well. So the signal that you're picking up with this radio telescope is really, really weak.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for you to have it and to transmit, first you have to transfer the radio frequency information by changing it into electricity. But because the frequency signal is so weak, the electric current would be pretty pathetic. You would not be able to measure it just by converting it right from radio frequency to electricity without amplifying it in some way.
Yeah.
So typically, a radio telescope will then have a pre-amplifier. So you musicians out there and radio folks, you know, you're probably pretty familiar with the idea of a pre-amplifier. Microphones usually have a pre-amplifier, that kind of thing. So a pre-amplifier is really just a way of boosting a signal a certain amount before it gets truly amplified for the final use of whatever that signal is going to be, whether it's in the audio industry or, in this case, the measuring the celestial bodies.
Yeah. I was going to say that they don't necessarily usually have them, but anyway.
Well, that's fair.
But it does assist in picking up these weak signals, that's for sure.
Yeah, and so the kind that tends to be used in radio telescopes are called low noise amplifiers, because we're talking about such
quiet
signals. And so, I'm glad I didn't do the old listener mail in the beginning, because then with all this, it would have probably blown everybody's ears out. So these LNA preamplifiers take these signals and then they boost them. Now, here's the thing. Any sort of interference at this point could really compromise the measurements you're making. So that includes molecular movement of the preamp. So the fact that, you know, everything in matter is, you know, made up of molecules, and these molecules move even in solid objects, right?
Yes.
So they in big radio telescope facilities, things like the professional ones like you would find in, say, NASA, they tend to have to cool down the preamplifier to reduce molecular movement as much as possible, and usually to around 10 Kelvin.
That's pretty cold.
Pretty cold, yeah. 0 Kelvin means no molecular movement. That's what, like, the deepest reaches of space would be, is 0 Kelvin. So 10 Kelvin's pretty cold. They tend to use liquid helium to cool down this device low enough so that it reduces the chance for it to contribute noise to this signal. All right, from there, the signal moves into a mixer.
Yes.
Where it has a party and networks with people. And
not that kind of mixer.
Uh-oh. Should have taken different notes.
Okay,
well, I'll just work from memory here then. The mixer's purpose is to change the frequency of the signal. Now, these signals are very high frequency, and it turns out that it's easier to amplify lower frequencies. It's possible to amplify higher frequencies, but in general, it takes less effort to amplify the lower frequency signals. And if it's kept at its high frequency and you're working with the frequency at its native frequency, there's the chance that it'll travel back up the antenna and create feedback. It's not dissimilar to what would happen with a microphone too close to a speaker, where you get that wonderful sound.
That's not wonderful.
No, you're probably more familiar with it than I am.
Yes.
With your rock and roll lifestyle and all.
Rock and roll lifestyle.
So then what happens is the mixer mixes this frequency. It doesn't just lower – the way it lowers this frequency is it mixes the frequency with a frequency generated by an oscillator. Mm-hmm. Okay? So the oscillator creates two frequencies that are both sent into the mixer. And one is they're polar opposites of each other, and so the mixer adds in the lower frequency together with the frequency that came in through the receiver,
mm-hmm.
and that is what it sends out to the intermediate frequency amplifier. So we've gone preamp to mixer. Mixer pulls in a second frequency from the oscillator. The oscillator frequency, the lower one, gets combined with the incoming frequency. That is then sent to the intermediate frequency amplifier, or IF amplifier.
Mm-hmm.
And that just processes that signal and amplifies it. And we've talked about amplifiers before in this podcast, so I'm not going to get into that. And then this stronger signal from the IF amplifier gets sent to, well, now we got to go to the square law detectors and the DC processors.
Okay.
Because we have to create a DC, a direct current, in order for that to go to a recording device.
Mm-hmm.
So this converts the frequency from the amplifier to direct current signals, and it smooths out the signals to make them easier to measure because they fluctuate quite a bit. Even as direct current, they tend to fluctuate. So the way they do this is they use capacitors. And if you recall, we've talked about capacitors before too. Capacitors store up electricity and then release it all at once, right? They're mm-hmm. they're kind of like a battery in that it can store electricity, but unlike a battery, it releases all the electricity. It doesn't do a constant flow.
Right.
This, by the way, is the reason why it's a bad idea to fiddle around with electronics you don't know a lot about, including things like televisions and computers.
Even when they're unplugged.
Because they have capacitors in them that can store high amounts of electricity that are potentially deadly.
Yes.
So especially things like computers and televisions. You don't want to, you know, just knock a hole in one or, you know, I've seen like videos. Like if you've ever seen a video of someone who accidentally breaks a television, you see a spark go off. That's a capacitor that's discharging.
Right.
And those can be very dangerous.
Chris and I have a little bit more to say about radio telescopes. But before we do, let's take another quick break to thank our sponsor. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I read an interesting analogy which said, imagine that you have a water hose and water is moving through the hose, but the pressure keeps changing. So the water sometimes is flowing out very quickly and sometimes it's sputtering out.
Yeah.
Okay. In the case of this detecting radio frequencies, you want a steady flow so that you can measure it properly. So what if you were to, instead of just measuring the water that comes out of the hose, you direct the hose toward a bucket.
Okay.
And at the base of the bucket, there's a spigot that you can open up. Well, if you open up the spigot on the bucket, water is going to flow out at a much more steady rate than it's flowing out of the hose. That's the kind of idea here with the capacitor, in that it's to try and smooth out that signal and make it easier to record. And then finally, you've got the actual recording device. Now, in the old days, the recording device was an old man who said, what was that? No, it was actually a pen attached to a movable arm and some paper that was pulled across. And then the movable arm would move depending upon changes in voltage. And so it was very similar to earthquake detecting equipment. We've talked about seismological equipment in the past where you see that, or even if you think also a similar thing is lie detectors.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, polygraphs where they have the little pen that scratches back and forth across the paper as the paper's going by. Similar kind of thing.
That's where you were on October 14th.
Yeah. So we tell you. When did you go supernova? So this in this case, instead, what it's doing is it's actually modern ones don't tend to use this anymore. They tend to actually send the data directly to a computer where it gets recorded, and you read out the information on a computer screen as opposed to looking at a physical representation scratched out in pen. That's generally how the radio telescope works from start to finish. So it's pretty interesting stuff. It's a little complex, I would say.
Yeah. One of the things that we were talking about, too, Jonathan mentioned the Jansky's experiments, where he would note that the interference would come around at a certain period of time. One of the prime places to put a radio telescope is near the equator.
Yes.
Because it is a really good... it's a really good place to get an accurate depiction as the Earth rotates.
Yep.
And it can identify sources of radio information coming from space.
Yep.
Very clearly. Unfortunately, it's a rather expensive place to try to build a radio telescope. So that's one of the reasons why they can be found in many different places around the world.
But yeah, closer to the equator tends to be better just for the, you know, the quality of information you can get from this. We've actually started using radio telescopes to kind of map out the celestial bodies around us, even ones that are not visible to the naked eye. Mm-hmm. And it's been very useful for astronomers. And there's still even, you know, amateur astronomers who use radio telescopes. It's not just the realm of massive scientific organizations like NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, those are the ones that, you know, if you look up the pictures online, you tend to see the really large arrays or really large antennas that belong to these major organizations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, a radio telescope is able to detect things, celestial bodies in the sky, by their angular resolution. Basically, it really is contingent on the wavelengths that it is able to detect. So that's one of the reasons why a radio telescope does need to be large. If you could build a small one, but it wouldn't be nearly as functional as a larger one. Basically, the larger a radio telescope is, the greater its angular resolution.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is, what it's using in terms of how you would measure the effectiveness of a radio telescope.
Right, right. If you had like a backyard telescope, visual telescope,
yeah,
the resolution you would get on that is equivalent to what you would get with a huge radio telescope. The resolution on a radio telescope is proportional to its size. So, you got to have a big one if you're going to have any real precise resolution. And again, we're not, you know, it's a little weird because it's hard to think of resolution in terms of something other than visible light, because that's what
yes.
we're mostly familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it still applies in this case.
Yep, yep. Radio astronomers have been able to detect all kinds of different molecules in space, too. You might be surprised to learn, I was a little surprised to learn, that radio astronomers were able to identify carbon dioxide, water, formaldehyde, ethyl alcohol, methanol, ammonia, and all kinds of other different kinds of, I just said kinds twice, of compounds out in space.
Mm-hmm.
And to use the radio telescope in that way, I mean, you can get a lot of information, and that's actually sort of ties back into the SETI project, because if you haven't listened to that particular podcast or are unfamiliar with the project, basically, astronomers were collecting large amounts of data from the radio telescope they were using for their project. And
mm-hmm.
the thing is, their computers couldn't analyze it all at one time. They were collecting so much that it was just stacking up, essentially.
Yeah.
Not literally, but figuratively.
To create an analogy, we've talked about in the past how on YouTube users are uploading 48 hours of content every minute.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like telling one person to watch everything that's on YouTube. You've got a growing amount of content that you're never going to catch up to, and only so much ability to consume it. So same sort of thing. In this case, we're talking about generating incredible amounts of data and having a limited ability to actually analyze that information.
So what they would do was to break it down and use it in a distributed computing project, which they were calling SETI at Home. And the idea being that people take a slice of information, allow their computers to work it out using a specially designed program, and send it back to the astronomers so that they could evaluate it and add it to the project. And, you know, it's just sort of a kind of a neat way to get into helping out with a project like that. But that's one of the problems, a good problem to have with radio astronomy, is that these large radio telescopes can collect an awful lot of data.
Yeah, and so we might use them to discover things like quasars or pulsars that we had never seen before, or even detect the presence of a galaxy that before this point we just didn't know existed. Now, SETI, of course, was really looking for any sort of signals that might indicate a pattern or a possible hint that there's some sort of other intelligent life out there that's generating these signals, not just some natural phenomenon.
Well, and radio telescopes can also detect information about near celestial bodies as well.
Yeah.
The surface for the moon. We knew it was sort of sandy before people actually landed there because astronomers had used radio telescopes to get signals from the moon and learn, you know, what it was like there. Also, Venus, you know, is shrouded by clouds, but astronomers are able to learn more about the surface by using radio telescopes and radar to get an idea of what the actual planet's surface is.
Well, they've also used it to observe the storms on Jupiter. So that's kind of interesting, too. Like, you know,
I figured they just looked at the weather report for Jupiter.
Right.
Today.
Today it's going to be a
storms.
Bit gassy.
Mm. Sounds like my... Never mind.
Never mind. Yes, let's leave that.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's an interesting topic. It's really... And it's one, honestly, I did not know very much about before we started researching this podcast.
No, I agree with you.
I mean, I knew of it. I knew it existed, but I didn't really understand what it was doing or how it did it. And it is pretty cool. I mean, it just shows me that radio is way cooler than I ever imagined. When I, you know, you sit there, you turn a radio on, that's the extent of your, maybe you play with a walkie-talkie, but that's about it as far as radio goes. And then the more you look into it, the more you're like, wow, this is really phenomenal stuff. Tesla was onto something.
I was going to say, he probably had a patent for that.
Yeah, I probably did, and then, never mind. I'm not going to go into another Tesla rant.
Okay, then.
All right, well, that wraps up this discussion. Minka, thank you so much for writing in and suggesting that. That was a really cool topic for us to tackle.
And that wraps up another classic episode of Tech Stuff. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It's always a joy to look into tech with Chris. I hope he's doing well. I cannot get him back on the show because he's got better things to do than to sit across the table and talk into a microphone with me. He's doing important work, like making people way, way smarter. So, Chris, if you're listening, thanks so much. It was a joy to work with you, and it's always fun to listen back to these old episodes. If you want to reach out and suggest new topics for me to cover in future episodes of Tech Stuff, go visit our website. It is techstuffpodcast.com. There you're going to find all the different ways to reach out to me and to let me know about your suggestions for the show. I greatly appreciate it. Don't forget, you can visit our merchandise store over at tpublic.com/techstuff. Go check that out. Any purchase you make goes to help the show. We greatly appreciate it. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.